At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Just Interesting podcast, the show where we aim to talk about things that we find, well, just interesting. As you can see, it is only the two of us this week. It's me and Robin. How's it going, Robin?
Fine, thank you, Alex. How's it going with you?
Not too bad this week. Well, actually, no. Let's set the tone for a little bit. It's been an absolute disastrous week, hasn't it?
It's been awful. It's been, I'm sure, along with the rest of the first world problems that we've been experiencing, it's been a real downer since a certain person ordered the invasion of a certain country in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
It's been kind of down, yeah.
So anyway, that's what we've decided that we should talk about this week. I mean, we were discussing it beforehand, like, should we talk about it or should we not talk about it? Like, everyone's talking about it, so maybe we should just kind of ignore it and have a bit of escapism. But honestly, we kind of felt like we wanted to talk about it.
Absolutely.
I don't know. And we thought it would be nice to... Sorry, go on.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt. We got quite a lot of comments from people commenting on videos, tweeting at us, sending us messages on Patreon, asking for us to talk about it. We did think that maybe it was unwise to talk about something that's in such a constant state of development. But we did encounter an interesting perspective that a journalist put forward on the whole situation with Russia and the West. Not just this is a new Cold War, but kind of coining a possible new term for what's been going on with Vladimir Putin's Russia and the West for the last, at least decade.
From at least 2014.
She did. Yeah, so we thought we'd take a look at that and try to examine the argument this journalist presents and whether it actually does apply and whether, I don't know, future historians might look back at this journalist's arguments and say, yeah, that's what we've been experiencing.
And just to kind of, you know, make it clear what it is that she's saying right from the get-go, it is that we are currently at war. We are not, you know, this isn't leading up to anything, but we have been in a war since at least 2014. Future historians, she says, may refer to this era as the Great Information War, or the First Great Information War.
Yeah, the first, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean...
That's depressing.
Well, yeah. So it's a bit of a depressing one this week, to be honest. But before we jump into the depressing things, we're going to be saying some things that we learned this week, and we're going to be getting your comments in as well. So if you've got your own kind of comment that you want to say about everything that's going on, we'd love to hear your views on it and see, you know, what you think. I think that's part of why we wanted to do this one live for everyone on YouTube, just to kind of 100%. Get everyone's perspectives on it. You know, it's nice to... I think over the last week I've found it's been nice to talk to people about this and kind of, I don't know, you know, it's nice talking about it,
yeah,
and getting it all out there instead Absolutely. Of just kind of doom scrolling on your phone, you know. I bet everyone's been doom scrolling this week. I've been doom scrolling a lot.
A little bit. It was I have kind of stopped looking at the news in the last couple of days just because the doom scrolling wasn't really... Doom scrolling is fun, in inverted commas, when there's developments, but it feels like things have been the same, which is just the Russians are slowly, inexorably creeping towards and, you know, shelling civilian centers of population in the Ukraine. And the Ukraine is desperately fending off the Russian invasion and asking for help and not really receiving it. That's possibly a discussion for another video, another podcast, another time, about whether or not the West's response has been adequate. That's not really what we're discussing today. There is, Alex, though, an urgent question from the chat in the live stream on YouTube so far. Bush. Hello, Bush from New Jersey, USA. Thanks for joining us. Bush asks, what was Martin arrested for?
I don't want to go into it now. You'll all see the news story eventually. I'm sure Anyway. We're going to distance ourselves from him as much as possible. No, this is actually sounding sinister. I can't, even joke about it anymore. He hasn't, Martin hasn't done anything except for streaking. He did a bit of streaking. He's sleeping it off in a prison cell overnight. He'll, you know, I'm sure he'll be back next week. But
probably, yeah. Depends. We haven't posted bail this time, so it might take a bit longer. But maybe you'll see him next
time. We can't keep bailing him out, Robin. You know, sometimes he's just got to learn. That's there's this a price to pay for
why,
you know,
Patreon supporters and YouTube members donate money to this channel. It's not to keep bailing Martin out. Cry out loud.
Oh. Jonathan Elam. Jonathan Elam in the chat's also saying, no quiz this week. I'm sorry. No. It doesn't really work with two people. I mean, maybe we could, I don't know. Maybe I can find an online quiz. We can do a quick one after this. Who knows?
Well, yeah, it would be very impromptu if you can do that. It would be very impromptu. You haven't prepared one. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, before we discuss the main topic, we'll be looking at comments. And you may already mention this, things that we learned this week.
I did already mention it, Robin, but that's fine. That's fine. This is what happens when we're live.
I know. These kind of mistakes happen. So I want to know, Alex, what have you learned this week?
So this week, Robin, I was looking at a psychology study that took place in the 1950s. And I think this might be quite a well-known one, but it's the first I've ever heard of it. But it's called The Three Christs of Ypsilanti.
No,
I'm probably pronouncing that.
That
place wrong. So in the 1950s, a psychiatrist had three paranoid schizophrenics patients who each believed they were Jesus Christ. And he had them live together for 2 years to see if their beliefs would change after confronting each other.
Sounds like a sitcom. Sorry.
Well, I mean... It does a little bit. It sounds a little bit like... And when I first saw this, I was like, ha, that's a funny idea. But then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, actually, do you know what? That's kind of sad and a bit depressing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like they're taking three emotionally disturbed people and who may have like you know, a fragile grasp of like the world around
reality.
Them. Yeah, reality. And then trying to shatter the own reality that they've conjured up for themselves.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
And there were some... So yeah, this was a psychologist called Milton Rokic. And I think he was inspired by something that he'd seen in like a magazine or something where there were two women who thought they were both the Virgin Mary. And it, admittedly, in that case... When they were introduced together, they realized like neither of them were the Virgin Mary, apparently, anyway. So that was his inspiration for doing this.
Yeah.
But after living together for 2 years, all three of the Jesuses were, you know, they were still confident that they were still the Son of God. You know, they were the reincarnation of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
And, you know, I think two of them thought the other one was delusional. And one of them thought the other two were machines. They were robots that had been programmed to think they were Jesus, but they weren't Jesus.
That's an interesting combination to go from serious religion to some serious sci-fi paranoia to explain the possible unreality of your religious delusion.
But there were some really unethical things as part of this experiment, though,
They
did. So they were trying to, I think they would write them letters on behalf of people from the hospital or one of their spouses, but it wasn't actually their spouse or from the hospital or something. It was them.
Nice.
And they would start by just sending normal sounding letters to try to build up their confidence and then use the letters to kind of challenge their beliefs a little bit. And they didn't. In all cases, I think they just broke off contact and ignored it. And in 1984, Rokic eventually included a foreword in a reprint of his original study saying, I really had no right, even in the name of science, to play God and interfere round the clock with their daily lives. So I think he kind of regretted it.
Well, I'm glad he... Glad he realized his mistake after it was all over. And
well, I mean, yeah, a little bit too late, but
oh man, that's something. That's funny because there's all those jokes from well, not from popular culture in general, but, you know, films and TV about psychiatrists and the kind of experiments they conduct. So the one that comes to mind, because it's a film that I'm very fond of, despite its reputation amongst a lot of people, Ghostbusters 2. At the beginning of that, when they're catching up with Egon Spengler and he's running psychology tests and he's got these big, you know, one-way mirrors and he's looking through them, and there's a child, and he's got some device that measures the happiness level of the child, and he brings in a puppy, and someone who's with him says, "Oh, that's really cute," and he says, "Yes, thanks," and then she kisses him on the cheek and says, "That's really sweet," and then she leaves, and then Egon turns to his assistant and says, "Let's see what happens when we take away the puppy," you know. And yeah. I always thought that was funny. And in another room, he's got two adults, and he's slowly turning up the temperature in the room to see if they get more and more violent with each other. And all those kind of jokes, I remember growing up with that kind of joke in films and TV and things. And part of me is like, ha, 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 that's just a caricature of psychologists. And then you go and present this to me, and you think, oh, it's not. Every joke is based in truth. You know?
I mean, there's no shortage of really unethical psychology studies, are there? I mean, this is just one that I hadn't heard of, but you've got the Milgram experiment, obviously, the Stanford prison experiment. There's loads of cases of psychologists playing God, you know. Oh, this is going to sound like I'm in Scientology now, isn't it? Like, I do believe in psychology as a study. I'm not anti-psychology. I just thought this was quite an interesting one, and seeing it's something that, as bad and unethical as it sounded, it's interesting to hear how their reactions would be when they were confronted with other people with the same kind of beliefs.
Absolutely. And it seems like an obvious thing to do when, if you're trying to treat somebody and cure them of that kind of delusion where they think they are the one, the only Jesus Christ, the obvious way to combat that is to say, well, what if you're not? You'd think it would work, or it seems like an obvious thing to do to try to cure them of their delusion, but clearly not, actually, because, I guess we've experienced this a lot. It's been in mainstream discourse for years now about conspiracy theorists and how you can... It doesn't work just confronting conspiracy theorists with the truth, the facts. They tend to double down on their own beliefs.
Yeah.
I guess that would happen with someone who's got a seriously deep delusion about their own identity. You're not necessarily going to get them out of it just by confronting them with the truth.
What's the what's the saying? You can't logic someone out of a position they didn't logic themselves into.
That makes sense. Yeah.
It may not be. I may be paraphrasing.
Snappier than that, but yeah.
Something like that.
Leslie McKenzie in the chat says, playing God, interesting choice of words. Was that a pun, Alex? Was that a pun?
Playing God? I don't know. What? A pun on
the psychiatrists playing God with the people who are deluded into thinking.
Jesus. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, that one.
Not my favorite one. Not my favorite of all of them. I like Zeus. Zeus is probably up there. I don't know.
Who else is in the chat?
What the conspiracies in the chat?
What the conspiracy? Ooh,
fantastic podcast that other people should be following.
Check it out.
Hosted by the one and only Peaswad, one of our long-time supporters on Patreon. So thank you, Peaswad. Yeah.
And Mindful Pig, I think, is the other host. Is that right?
Yeah, I think.
Correct
us
if we're wrong.
So.
What the conspiracy? Sorry if we got it wrong. We've got some good responses so far. But it's interesting because you were talking about psychology with your fact. What I learned this week was also to do with the brain, but not the psychology of the brain, but to do with the kind of physics of the brain, the biology of it, in the sense of I learned what happens when you get knocked out.
Nothing good, I imagine.
No, not really good.
it's pretty bad for you, isn't it?
It's pretty bad for you, but not about the consequences, but as in the mechanics of why you get knocked out, basically. So the example would be somebody punches you, knockout punch. What happens when you get a knockout punch? And I'd never thought of this before, but it makes a lot of sense. So in your skull is your brain. Your brain doesn't go up to the edges of your skull. Your brain is kind of floating in a sack of fluid in your skull. Yeah, right? Because otherwise your brain would be bumping up against your skull all the time. The whole point of the skull is to help protect your brain. So if there's a little bit of distance, if there's some fluid, there's some cushioning between the brain and your skull, then it helps protect the skull. A bit like you've got a parcel and you've got some bubble wrap around the vase inside. It makes sense.
Sure.
But
yeah.
Yeah. So when someone receives a knockout blow to the head, what happens is the force of the fist hitting, let's say, typically the front of the face, pushes the brain backwards because it's floating in this fluid. It pushes it backwards and it hits the back of your skull.
Okay, yeah.
And then this is where the knockout becomes really effective. The kinetic energy of the brain hitting the back of the skull, it basically bounces back and hits the front of your skull.
So it's like a bit of so reverb get, happening with
yeah,
the brain.
Exactly,
moving.
You get this reverb, yeah. And the skull, the brain inside the skull just goes like that. And of course, oh, if you when you get good, knocked out as well, your limbs go limp and you fall back. And as you fall, you hit the ground and the brain gets battered again, bouncing around between the two sides of your skull.
Yeah.
And that's what I learned happened to what happens to your brain when you get knocked out. How you get knocked out is it's not necessarily. It's got nothing to do with the damage being done to your jaw, the pain being caused by, you know, breaking your nose or something. It's to do with the brain itself being thrown around inside your skull and hitting the sides.
I mean, honestly, not to diminish your fact of the week, Robin, but
no. Yep.
I still don't really understand what happens with the brain. Does it just shut down? Just like, okay, you need to go to sleep now. Is it like a genuine, like what happens
yeah.
to it? It gets
so,
hurt.
Yeah, basically it gets bruised and the brain's not used to it. And it just temporarily kind of kills the nerve connections. The connections between all the neurons in your brain just get momentarily cut off, a bit like a power cut. It's only a split second. It's just enough to kind of shut your body down. That's a lie. It doesn't shut your body down. If you shut your body down, you would die. It just shuts your brain down and you stop being conscious for a moment. I know if there's any surgeons in the chat, any doctors, you can correct me from my misunderstandings of biology.
If there are, don't tell them. Don't give them any
more
advice.
Oh, come on. advice? What are you talking about?
I'm reading some of the comments, Robin. And I just want to say, I'm very sorry to you, Robin, because but there's a lot of like, you know, Robot Robin comments. How did that joke start? How did it start? Because
you started it, didn't you?
Years ago. I don't want to say it was me, but
it was definitely you. But I don't remember what triggered it. you just started it. Actually, no. I think I know how it started. Actually, my voiceovers. People used to say I sounded like a robot. when I first appeared on camera, there was a lot of shock and surprise that I was an actual human being. And people commented, oh, gosh, this guy's not a robot. And then you picked up on it, Alex. And on the previous podcast that shall not be named, you made it. You actively tried to make
right.
it a meme.
No, that doesn't sound you. Right.
That was
I didn't design that the poster in the backdrop. That's not...
Yeah, I was going to say, it's right there. And we've even got a little GIF thing on Twitch. On our we've got a Twitch channel, twitch.tv/just_interesting.
That's
and one of the GIFs on there Alex made is me as a robot with laser eyes. Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, I do encourage it a little bit.
Gentle encouragement.
A filthy casual says, oh no, Robin's learning human anatomy so he can be a more convincing android. So there you go. Sophie
that's
says,
not true.
So Robin's a robot, Martin's a career criminal. What is Alex's secret talent? That is yet to be determined, I think.
Yeah, we'll find out one day. Alex's secret talent surely is communing with ghosts and spirits. A medium for the other world.
Well, no, it should be failing to, right? One day, we're going to go back to Epping Forest and we're going to find Dick Turpin.
We're totally going to find Dick Turpin.
You heard it here first.
Ghost. His body's in York.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, a few comments as well have referenced frying pans. Spiffing says my secret talent is frying pan collector. For those of you who don't know, that is a reference to us playing a game on Twitch. Me, Martin and Robin recently played through what was it, Man of Medan?
Yeah, the Dark Pictures Anthology, Man of Medan, the first game in that series. Yeah.
And I failed to catch a frying pan, which hit me in the head, so.
And then got attacked by a pan later on in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So clearly the pans are out to get you, Alex.
Oh, this is interesting. So Leslie McKenzie says, you're describing a contra coup injury where the front of the head is hit, but the back of the brain takes the brunt of the injury, probably injuring the brainstem, which would knock you out.
Oh, well, my God. Thank you, Leslie. that brain, explains it. Yeah.
Brain injuries just scare me, man. Terrible. Like, that's yeah. It always makes me cringe when films, they like just bash them over the head and knock them out. It's like, well, they've got brain damage now, so, you know.
Yeah, we can get brain damage from being choked out, can't you? Just by cutting off the oxygen supply to the brain, it can cause really bad brain damage. So whenever your hero is, you know, non-lethally choking someone in the movie, you're like, you've just limited that man's capability of getting re-employed.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters, getting re-employed in our wage slave state. But what are their employment prospects? I don't care about quality of life. Can they data entry? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the brain and the heart will get me thinking about damage to those two things. When you realize how important, how essential the heart and the brain are.
Yeah.
And confusing as well in terms of anyone who's interested in evolution, it boggles my mind as well, because we've evolved so that it's chicken and egg. It's like the brain needs the blood supply from the heart to function, but the heart doesn't beat without the brain sending it nerve signals. And it's kind of like, it's so symbiotic. I'm like, how did the evolution come up with that? Kind of like, which came first? Ah, brain. It hurts my head. Yeah, Spiffing also agrees. Brain is off limits, Alex. Yeah.
Brain.
Let's not damage
limits.
The brain, people. Yeah.
Well, Chris Breyer has led us nicely into our next segment, which is comments of the week. And he says, best podcast ever, smiley face. So thank you, Chris. That's very nice. Oh, and Aaron Little's just donated some money. Oh my gosh.
That's amazing. Thank you, Aaron. Wow.
Great stuff as always, guys. Will you guys be doing in-person adventures documentaries again? Do you know what? I'd really like to. And
that is the plan.
I've said this, and I'm very certain about it. I think we should actually, because obviously I live in Scotland now, so.
Absolutely.
But I'm down to London like pretty frequently, so I think maybe sometime this summer we should definitely film a few, or maybe even sooner.
It's nice.
Arrange a few filming days.
Aaron, it is 100% a plan of ours to do it. It's just been inconvenient, the whole pandemic and the. I mean, now Britain is officially, I think, UK. Sorry, I should say the UK is coming out of all COVID restrictions this month, end of this month, I believe. So we should be free to roam and do as we please. It's just been a turbulent time for all of us, not just with the pandemic, but, you know, for personal reasons. Like we said, Martin's in and out of jail all the time. Alex is protesting for all kinds of reasons. And my latest MOT did not go well. But once we've all conquered that, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Did you have any other comments from any of our previous podcasts, Robin, that you'd like to bring
actually,
up and discuss?
Yeah, a couple, because relevant to this one. So we did a podcast, what was it, a month ago? Just over a month ago, where we examined, we looked at psychic predictions for 2022, and we discussed the possibility of World War III breaking out, and specifically over the Ukraine. And so a few people have been commenting this week on that podcast episode, number 73, so it was four episodes ago, responding to the fact that, you know, the Ukraine has now been invaded and things are heating up. So a couple of good ones from like Matthew Feldvari commented a few days ago saying, Baba Vanga predicted that World War III would break out and a dictator would die. Is it Putin? Matthew thinks definitely Putin. In this situation, it would be convenient, perhaps, if it were Putin. I don't know, though, if Putin dies, does the war on Ukraine end? It's a tough one to guess. Because
I mean, if World War III has already broken out, then I expect he's not the only one that's going to die. So, as in, it may be other world leaders as well, you know. But no, I mean, it's definitely interesting how, well, interesting's a bad choice of words. It's a very sad that the predictions in that video, you know, are coming true so quickly. Hopefully, the World War III thing is still not right and remains to be so, but it's definitely. It's a scary time. It's a scary time.
It is, absolutely. Yeah. Do you have any comments, Alex?
Well, actually, someone commented, in the stream, and I just wanted to bring it up. DF commented, "What do you make of Richard Doty?" And I had to look him up because the name sounded familiar, but I couldn't remember. He was the guy who was in that Mirage Men documentary, I believe, if that's the Richard Doty you're talking about.
Name rings a bell, but I don't remember what he did.
That was he was a real life Man in Black. You know, the Men in Black.
Yes.
So I can't remember what the operation was that they were part of, or what the project that they were doing. But
it was the one where they went and told people about aliens existing in order to discredit the people who were.
Yeah. So people who had seen UFO sightings, they instead of publicly saying like, "Oh, I saw this shaped craft," or whatever, which was actually a US top secret military test vehicle, they would visit them and try and encourage them to believe that they'd actually seen aliens in order to then discredit those people when they would talk to the press and stuff, be like, "I saw aliens," when actually they had seen, you know, some top secret US aircraft project.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I don't know if he's said anything recently or what prompted that question, but that was definitely interesting.
Yeah, that's a good topic. We should probably look into that sometime.
That's definitely an interesting topic, just for sure.
There's a thing, yeah.
Mm. And Funky Monkey in the chat also says Loch Ness Monster or Banshee Hunting for a In the Field documentary.
That would be
fun. We would need a new name, wouldn't we? Because we can't have a... In plain sight,
yeah.
So,
just in plain sight. Just in plain sight.
But if anyone has any suggestions for what if we did a documentary series, what it could be called, give us a comment. Let us know. We'll give you 1% of the proceeds, probably.
Hey, subject to a discussion.
Subject to a discussion.
1% of the $1 that we make.
The $1 we make, yep. Thanks, YouTube. Nice. Well, Robin, we're putting it off, but shall we get on to our main topic of conversation this week?
We shall, because it's quite a meaty one, actually. So today we will be discussing a theory put forward by a journalist called Carol Cadwalader, who is a British journalist, came to fame a few years ago for exposing the scandal between Cambridge Analytica, the data company based in the UK, who was hired by the Brexit campaign in 2016 to illegally use Facebook users' data in order to create targeted propaganda, essentially, to persuade people to vote in favor of Brexit in the referendum in 2016. It turned out that Cambridge Analytica had acted incredibly illegally, and she was the journalist who broke that story. She released or published 19-part Twitter thread the other day about what's going on in Russia and the Ukraine. But as Alex mentioned at the beginning, she's referring to what she thinks historians should call the Great Information War. Mm. And she thinks that maybe this is the first one. And what's happening now in 2022 is actually...
Robin, we've lost your camera.
Yeah, I'm just sorting out.
Sorry.
Live streaming mishaps.
Oh, there we go.
She says what's happening now in 2022 is actually the culmination of something that started in 2014, which is when Putin annexed the Crimea and started actively aiding separatists in eastern Ukraine. So I thought we would go through her tweets, discuss them and see whether she's onto something, because she makes a lot of claims, but because it's a Twitter thread, she makes statements without providing the facts, because there's limited character. There's a very, very tight character limit on Twitter. So it's very much an argument without obvious evidence. And I thought it'd be interesting to go through it, look at it and see whether she's got a point, you know, whether she's onto something.
It's, I mean, I'd be interested to hear if anyone else out there also saw this Twitter thread on their Twitter timelines, because it was all over mine. I saw it was literally like it would pop up for about 2 days. And I think, it's been retweeted like 30,000 times. So I think it's definitely a worthwhile topic to talk about, for sure.
So let's start by reading this first tweet. Part one, she says, I think we may look back on this as the first great information war, except we're already 8 years in. The first great information war began in 2014. The invasion of Ukraine is the latest front. And the idea that it doesn't already involve us is a fiction, a lie. So this is the premise. It's saying that we are already at war with Russia, and we've been at war with Russia for at least, well, for the last 8 years, what she says. She identifies the beginning of the first great information war as 2014. To be honest, my immediate reaction was, I would be tempted to stretch it back further than 2014.
I mean, yeah, it seems like what's the distinct, I mean, the distinctive point that she goes on to say why it's 2014 is because this was a reaction to the ousting in Ukraine of the then president of Ukraine, Yanukovych. Is that?
Yes.
Is that who it is?
I think it was.
And that was with a Ukrainian revolution in 2014 due to a lot of corruption that was seen to be happening by the president at the point that time. I think they drafted a bill to align themselves more with the EU, right? They drafted a bill that would align Ukraine with the EU that had been drawn up by Ukrainian parliamentarians. But then the president basically refused to sign it and wanted to align more with Russia. And that's kind of what sparked these.
He was long known as a bit of a Putin puppet. But there was protests, and event. I think after a week or two of protests, he ordered the military to and killed about 100 protesters, which sparked the revolution. He killed his own citizens in order to stop protest against an undemocratic action he took, not to sign a bill into law that his parliament had passed. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So he was overthrown. A democratically elected government was installed in the Ukraine, but that government happened to be pro-Europe and not pro-Putin, and then Putin seized this opportunity to annex the Crimea and not invade eastern Ukraine, but almost certainly send undercover troops into Ukraine and
invasion by stealth, maybe.
Yeah, military supplies to separatists, in inverted commas, who, as we'll discover in this Twitter thread, were Russian-speaking Ukrainians, some of whom were genuinely pro-Russian, many of whom may have been persuaded to become pro-Russian separatists by the information war, as Carol Cadwallader calls it.
Just to go to the chat very quickly, Spiffing says, is that the man they want to bring back in as the puppet regime? Referring to Yanukovych, and absolutely, that's the he's kind of lining him up now. He fled to Russia, didn't he? Or
I think
Putin wants to, I think, put him back in.
Yeah,
put him back in. Yeah,
it's amazing how transparent Putin's bothering to be, despite all the propaganda and misinformation that's going on.
Yeah.
Just so we know. Again, we're only on the first tweet, and there'll be more information to clarify her points in later tweets. But the one thing that I did take issue with the premise of her argument is that she says it began in 2014. And what she's referring to is misinformation by Russia, particularly online. But we know for a fact that Russian state-sponsored misinformation and manipulation of facts and public opinion on the internet began at least in the year 2000, because a study was done as early as 2002, I think, into forums on the Russian internet, and noticed that between 1998 and 2000, there was something like 70% of discourse was liberal, what they characterize as politically liberal-minded and socially liberal, and then almost overnight in the year 2000, it switched, and 60% of discourse online in Russia became pro-governmental and anti-propaganda, as in critical of anti-governmental thought, if that makes sense.
It's remarkable how on it they were with such early technology.
Very, very early days.
How I mean, we're talking about Russia, but I'm sure this happened with other countries as well, although I'm not trying to be like a whataboutism. But it's remarkable how like governments realized how useful the internet was going to be in the information age.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd expect them to. It's what intelligence services do, in a way. It's what they're paid for in every country, to anticipate what could be weaponized in the future.
Is the difference then, though, that back then we didn't have like these private massive companies that are essentially, you know, open to everyone but completely closed to the like back end, keeping it hidden, like Facebook and Twitter and all of
yeah.
that. You know, allowing people to influence, you know, people all over the world and keep that activity pretty much private.
Yeah. So definitely there's a massive difference in the extent to which the reach that they could have with misinformation, disinformation and propaganda on the internet between the year 2000 and the year 2014. Absolutely. So tweet number two explains why Carol Cadwalader picked 2014. She says, it was Putin's fury at the removal of President Yanukovych in February 2014 that kicked everything off. Information operations were the first crucial step in the invasion of Crimea and eastern Ukraine, a deliberate attempt to warp reality to confuse both Ukrainians and the world. This is true, but a little misrepresentative of, ironically, she's misrepresenting exactly what happened. So what she's saying is that, in her opinion, the great information war was kicked off in February 2014 by what Alex described earlier as the democratic replacement of a pro-Putin puppet Russian government in the Ukraine. But what she's suggesting is that the information war, which is an online thing using the internet, preceded the annexation of Crimea, the island of the Crimea. This isn't true, actually. There was a massive propaganda campaign by Putin's forces and his spies just before he annexed the Crimea and started supporting separatists in eastern Ukraine. But it was actually on conventional mass media. It was newspapers, it was TV, and it was websites of news websites online, obviously, but it wasn't social media in the same way. So I think what she's saying there is actually, I would take issue with that in the sense that if you look at news reports from the time, all the propaganda that the Russians used just before they annexed Crimea was actually conventional mass media, news, TV.
So it wasn't if we're making a distinction that we're living in a different era of the great information war, then there's no distinction at that specific time. Is that what you're saying? Because it's still using conventional media. When did the kind of manipulation using social media and everything take off?
I mean, as we'll discuss later, they probably almost certainly were already active on social media. But what Carol Cadwalader is implying, I think, in this tweet is that the sudden use of social media, as the weaponization of social media by Russia, started in just before they annexed Crimea in 2014. But that's not the case. The propaganda they use there was just conventional mass media, not social media. But tweet number three. She says, this was not new. The Soviets had practiced disinformation for years, but what was new in 2014 was technology, social media. It was a transformative moment, hybrid warfare on steroids, a golden Willy Wonka ticket to manipulate hearts and minds, almost completely invisibly. This is what I was just complaining about. I think she's mischaracterizing the propaganda campaign in 2014 by the Russians as a social media campaign. It wasn't. But Russian trolls were active on the internet, as we just established, for a very long time. And we know that Facebook launched in 2006, YouTube launched 2006 as well, Twitter launched 2007, and those are the big social media sites, in the West at least. So it's perfectly possible that Russians were able to manipulate social media in 2014.
Are we just kind of having an issue about the timing of it, but not that it's taking place? Like, as in, like,
I think that's it. Yeah,
It's not 2014, maybe it's 2015, 2016, but it's it's becoming an increasing problem. Is that fair to say? And one that is becoming more and more difficult to ignore.
Yeah. I think she's presenting it as this, she's doing what historians tend to do, which is pick a date and say, this is when it started. I think she's not necessarily being accurate by picking that date, because Russian trolls were active on the internet for years before that. In fact, there was a report in 2013, this is the year before she's claiming it started, by the nonprofit organization Freedom House, which is an American organization that examined is interested in preserving the freedom of the internet. And so it was examining government interference by all governments, not just Russia, but by all governments, in bots and misinformation on the internet. And to quote their report, they said, Russia has been at the forefront of manipulating online discourse for several years. And this is from a report from 2013. So already factually, I think Carol Cadwalader is being a bit misleading there. Just at the timing, as you say, just at the time.
Okay, so what does she go on to say?
She says, tweet number four, but it wasn't just Ukraine. We now know Russia began another offensive in February 2014 against the West, specifically, but not exclusively, America. How do we know this? Because the FBI conducted a forensic multi-year investigation that almost no one paid any attention to. Tweet number five, the Mueller report. You've heard
of it.
But you've probably heard of it as a headline about how it didn't prove collusion between the Kremlin and the Trump campaign.
That's what true. That is what the news articles immediately yelled about. True, yeah.
What it did prove, beyond any doubt, was that Russia attacked the 2016 US election through multiple routes. So just go back to tweet number four, Alex. When she says that almost no one paid any attention to, do you think she's right? Do you agree with that?
No one paid, I will say that no one really like paid much attention to the contents of the report. They paid attention to what the media said happened in the report, if that's fair to say, or the media's immediate conclusions of the report. Yep. They were looking for that one thing. That one thing, did they collude with Russia? And because it wasn't in it, then it didn't matter. Everyone ignored the rest of it. So yeah, I'd kind of agree with that.
In fact, the report, I think its actual name, we call it the Mueller report, but that in itself is unhelpful, because it's officially called Report on the Investigation into Russian Interference in the 2016 Presidential Election.
Yeah.
By calling it the Mueller report, you completely ignore what it's actually about. So everything about it played into Putin's hands in that sense. Yeah, you're right, Alex. And Trump, by the story becoming all about Trump, it completely ignored.
It was like, he didn't collude with Russians, but it's like, but they were still, you know, interfering in the election. Also, we're going to go on to it, but it's how the West kind of framed this as like interfering, colluding, you know, or they've been meddling, when actually this should be really, well, should it be, I guess is the question, but an act of war. I mean, they're trying
to overthrow
our elections. Like, that's...
Yeah. Somebody, a hacker, gets into your computer. Would you say they attacked you or they meddled with your computer? What would you say?
I guess. Chris Breyer in the chat has just become a member of the channel. So thank you very much.
Ooh, thank you, Chris. Welcome. So, next tweet says, elaborates on the ways in which Russia attacked, in her words, the 2016 US election. She says, just one of the ways Russia attacked the 2016 US election was via the tech platforms, especially Facebook. This was a military technique pioneered in Ukraine in 2014. By 2016, it refined, iterated, and supersized these. Most brilliantly of all, they were entirely invisible. Now, I looked into this to just to see how accurate she her characterization of events is. And I honestly, so what I did was I went onto Google, and let's assume Google's trustworthy. And I did a search for Facebook and Russian interference, several different combinations of keywords, between January the 1st, 2007 and January the 1st, 2014.
Yeah.
To see what came up, what was being reported. And then I also looked up about the propaganda campaign just before the Ukrainian invasion. Facebook did not come up once in connection with Russian interference and Russian bots. And the reports I read since the Crimean annexation in 2014, when talking about the propaganda campaign by Russia just before they invaded, or annexed, sorry, didn't mention Facebook either. So I don't know where she's got that from. She may have information that's not available on the internet, but I'm not 100% sure why she is saying Facebook was using Facebook for propaganda purposes was pioneered in Ukraine in 2014. However, I do agree with what she says about by 2016, it was refined, iterated, and supersized. I mean, that's definitely true by then. And what's scarier, I think, is that she says most brilliantly of all, highly invisible, which is kind of true. So in 2019, a group called Secondary Infection with a K is a Russian organization that's basically a third branch of the Russian government's misinformation, disinformation, bots campaign against the West.
Yeah,
but they only were found basically in 2019, did in January 2014, but no one knew they existed until 2019 because their entire modus operandi is in fake accounts that only exist for the few seconds that they post.
Right. Okay.
So it's not possible to trace their activity because the accounts exist literally like a butterfly for a day, you know, for those few moments. They post and then they disappear, these kind of self-destroying social media accounts.
It's so scary, isn't it?
It's very scary, very sophisticated. So that actually, so people are aware of the GRU and the IRA, which is the Internet Research, I can't remember what A stands for now.
And I mean, like, we're talking about Russia and all this, but it does make you wonder, like, how many other countries out there have this a kind of similar setup that we just don't know about, that's in secret. I mean,
yeah,
they called it infection.
Yeah, secondary infection. That's a pretty scary.
Are we the baddies?
Yeah, you do wonder that, yeah. But she's right that by 2016 it was supersized, because Facebook in 2018, Facebook released a statement to say that they estimated 150 million Facebook users were affected by Russian bots from one of the three organizations in Russia that do this. 150 million users were exposed to Russian IRA bots between January 2015 and August 2017. So again, I don't know where she's getting her idea that Facebook was pioneered in 2014. The use of Facebook as a propaganda tool was pioneered in 2014, because the data we have only identifies it from 2015. But 150 million people exposed to one of the three organizations' bots. That is it safe to assume that three times as many Facebook users were affected by all three organizations' bots?
I mean, could well be. Could well be.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess the main point is that a crazy amount of users were affected. And this has been going on for ages undetected. So, I mean, even if not everyone got infected by it, the damage that is already done, I think, is fair to say.
Yeah. So she goes on. I'm going to skip ahead to tweet number 9 because she kind of gets sidetracked by some Brexit-related stuff. Yeah.
Just for anyone in the chat who may not have the link, I'm going to put this in the description, so you may need to refresh the page.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Yes, for this
Twitter thread. If anyone wanted to follow along.
So tweet number 9, because she talks about some Brexit stuff. before getting back to the Russian thing. She says, in 2016, we knew none of this. Russia and other bad actors acted with impunity and, in some cases, alignment. But now, through the sheer bloody hard work of academics, journalists, and the FBI, we do know. But it was complex, messy, and difficult. So we brushed it all under the carpet. Okay, so this is a juicy one. Who do you think she's referring to, Alex, when she says we brushed it all under the carpet? Does she mean us collectively as a society? Or does she mean academics, journalists, and the FBI? The government? Who is she talking about there?
I mean, I think we brushed a lot of this. I mean, I think it's a difficult... I think that we as a public have difficulty en masse dissecting and understanding complex information. Unless it's got a juicy headline, there's always going to be another scandal and we're going to forget about it and we're going to move on to the next story. So I think in part, yes, we as a society might have brushed this under the carpet just because of, what is it? It's actually got a term. It's like... information fatigue or something.
That's true.
Where you just get so numb to like all the scandals and everything going on. If you've been hearing about Russian collusion for the past 4 years, is this news story really going to stand out to you? But I mean, we're still waiting on the Russia report over here in the UK. So I feel like there is definitely some government involvement in sweeping this under the carpet as well.
That's true. We have a couple of reports, actually, that our Prime Minister Boris Johnson has swept under the rug very discreetly. That's again a different topic perhaps to discuss about our governmental ties to the Russians. I would like to say that she says in 2016 we knew none of this. Now, I think that's a factual statement if she's referring to society, and particularly British society, because I don't know if I was aware of that, of how involved disinformation campaigns were, in particular the US election, by that point, except I did some Googling again. I spent a few hours today looking into it. And from 2011, I found three news reports and a governmental report, including one from The Guardian, the newspaper she works for, talking about social media bots and how they're being used for disinformation campaigns. So that's from 2011, 5 years before she says, we knew nothing about this. To be fair, none of them explicitly links Russia with Facebook, but two of them are about Russian bots. One of them is about Russian bots on Twitter and how they're being used to drown out anti-Kremlin tweets in Russia. And the other, from 2011, was about the US military's propaganda bots, including on Facebook.
Well, there we go. So yeah, multiple governments.
Yeah.
Using similar tactics.
Similar tactics. So apart from the fact that this confirms that America would have known Russia was doing this far in advance of them publicly acknowledging it, because if America's doing it, they would have assumed the Russians were doing it. But the interesting thing is that in 2011, the Americans were doing it on Facebook.
Yeah.
So the difference is that Mark Zuckerberg went to Russia in 2012 on a kind of big publicity tour to try to drum up support for Facebook, because it wasn't doing as well as they wanted it to in Russia, because the Russian government...
It's definitely not anymore, is it?
Yeah, I know.
It's been shut down.
Yeah. The Russian government in 2012 were promoting Russian competitors to Facebook, presumably ones that the Russian government could control more directly. So in 2012, Facebook wasn't that big in Russia. So these articles I found from 2011, which reports American propaganda bots on Facebook, don't reflect necessarily what the Russians are doing to Facebook at that time.
Is it more like, so she's mentioning about 2016, is it more that like by that time we knew how effective this was? Maybe we'd seen bots before, but it was more of like, this could be a problem down the line. And now in 2016, you'd already had Brexit, you'd already had Trump's election, bots were becoming and are now a huge, massive problem in the information war.
That was probably that was probably the big wake up moment for our society, certainly in realizing it was happening. And of course, there's the hacking as well. The Russians hacking the Democrat servers to leak information to WikiLeaks to damage Hillary Clinton's campaign, which was confirmed by the Mueller report. That's all part of information war.
Information war, yeah.
Information war, yes.
Well, I mean, yeah, right. That was like a deliberate timed release of information to be the most damaging to one political person's campaign. Mm. I mean, we're treading over old ground. We've spoken about this years ago. Loads of people have spoken about this years ago. But it's seeing this whole thread and seeing it all summed up neatly is
pretty good.
Something. It is pretty good. It's
quite
a good read.
Yeah. Just want to respond to one of the comments. A busy bee. Hello,
a busy bee.
Says The Guardian got rid of a lot of have your say sections on its articles, as in the comment sections, because the Russian bots kept attacking them so hard.
Wow.
I mean, that's interesting to know and completely plausible, because ironically, the only major left-wing newspaper in the UK, The Guardian, is the only one that consistently has tried to hold Russia to account and is therefore the one who's the biggest target of the communist, in inverted commas, lefty Russia. I think there's no greater sign that you're no longer left-wing government when you're attacking your enemy's left-wing papers because they're the ones calling you out. Anyway, that's an aside. Yeah. So tweet number 10, she says, we failed to acknowledge Russia had staged a military attack on the West. We called it meddling. We called it interference, is what you said earlier, Alex. Yeah. Mm. This is true. Yeah. All the mass media in the West at the time, and politicians as well, particularly politicians in power, referred to it as meddling or interference, which is downplaying it, right? I think that's downplaying the threat.
Mm. Yeah.
I can only assume, maybe you disagree with me, Alex, I don't know, I can only assume they downplayed it in that way because the ones in power, of course, benefited from the electoral interference and therefore couldn't be seen to be delegitimizing themselves.
I think as well, yeah, no, I do agree with that, but I think as well, Russia's aim with this is to destabilize the West's democracies with all their like election interference. So by calling it meddling and downplaying it, you're not saying like our democracy has failed. You're just saying they're trying to interfere and meddle, but it's fine, it's still working, you know. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not if we called it like Russia's attacking democracy and they've you know meddled and changed the result, then you've kind of Russia's won, right? Because they've destabilized a Western democracy.
It's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
Whereas whether it's true or not that they've done that, saying it, I think, damages the democracy a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's about
it's
the idea.
Chess
we
move.
All have to,
yeah.
We all have to believe that it works, and then it works.
Yeah. Yeah, because if either they don't acknowledge it because they benefited from it and therefore don't want to lose power based on the delegitimization of their own election, or they do acknowledge it and they're therefore damage the democratic process anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, so, you summed up nicely. That's great.
So maybe that's partially why people were not really saying, you know, just how dangerous it was, what was going on. Your camera's gone again, Robin. You need
it's
to
right.
sort
I'm
the cannon
it.
Out.
I'm on it. It's the Russian bots.
Yeah, someone in the chat earlier, I think it might have been Spiffing, said that they're trying to silence you, Robin.
I admit more so than usual I am a bit worried about talking about Russia on the internet publicly with our cameras on.
I mean, maybe this is horrible to say, but I think they've got bigger fish to fry right now, you know. I think they've got bigger problems than our pokey little podcast.
That's my only consolation. Moving on. Tweet 11, she says, this failure to recognize as an attack is at the heart of what's happening now in Ukraine, because the first offensive in the Great Information War was from 2014 to 2022, and Putin won. And he won by convincing us it wasn't even a war.
It's quite a statement, and it's one that we've kind of been discussing already, I think. But I mean, that's an interesting maybe question to throw into the chat at this point. What do you think? Do you think that's true? Have we been in an information war from 2014 to the current day? And is Putin winning that war? There's a depressing question to ask the chat. He won by convincing us it wasn't even a war.
Yeah.
It's a good point. And I can see where she's coming from with that.
Yeah. I don't know. The only thing I would possibly dispute there is that how actively was Putin convincing us it wasn't a war? Because to do that, you then get into the discussion of how many politicians in the West have financial ties to the Russians, and it's a lot. But it's more like, is it more of a failure of the West to realize it's a war rather than Putin actively convincing us? Because when you're using a new weapon that doesn't look like a weapon, because it's not a conventional weapon, really, do you have to work very hard to convince people you're not using it if people don't realize it's a weapon in the first place? That's the only thing I'd say about that. Putin won, I would agree. I don't know how hard he had tried to convince us he wasn't fighting the war, because, you know, we weren't really looking for it.
That's a great point, yeah.
Yeah, but she elaborates. She says, we fell for it. We said it was just ads and that don't work, and a bot didn't tell me to vote. Facebook is still an open threat surface, exploited by authoritarians from the Philippines to India to Brazil to Hungary. Maybe not a world war, but the world is at war. Again, interesting. I don't disagree about the way social media is being used by authoritarian governments and dictators in all nations, that, and including our own, to be honest, in the UK. Technically a fully functioning democracy, but slightly dysfunctional and with a very authoritarian government at the moment. Just to get really academic for a moment, she says, it may not be a world war, but the world is at war. That's an interesting thing that kind of binds into the theory, I think. That statement rings true if you believe the internet is a unifying kind of homogenous grouping of people that disregards race and religion and nationality and language, because, you know, the world is always at war. If you're just saying there's struggle going on somewhere in the world,
I mean, yeah, it's a bit of a non-statement, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Anywhere in the world is at war at some part of the time. Yeah,
exactly. So the only way, but if you're going to say the world is at war, then you have to assume that humanity is this single unified, block of beings. And whenever any part of it is at war, then the rest of it is at war. So, I mean, that's up to you and your personal opinions. I get it though.
And I get the public's response. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times I've heard that response online and in person of, oh, a bot didn't tell me which way to vote. It's like, no, they didn't, but they might have unwittingly influenced your decision. You know,
100%.
You wouldn't even have known it was a bot. You don't know. We don't know. I've seen tweets and gotten angry at people's responses in the last week, and then I've read their Twitter names and it's like Mike01234965637,
right.
And it's like, oh, this person doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
and for that brief moment of anger, you're completely distracted from the real issues.
Exactly. And I like to think, you know, I'm not super smart. You know, neither of us are super smart. Well, actually, no, you are a genius, Robin, with all of the internet plugged into you at any given time. But
too much conflicting information.
But, you know, I like to think that I'm kind of clued up on this sort of stuff. I pay a bit more attention to it than maybe the average person. So, and it still catches me out. This catches me out easily on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So I totally see her point there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then she talks about, kind of describes what she sees the picture of Western governments to be. For a couple of tweets, she says, you know, in Britain, we're a captured state. In America, the institutions of government worked, even in spite of Trump, she says. Maybe. She says, the authorities investigated individuals, were indicted, charged, jailed. The hostile actions of a foreign state were examined and unpicked. But then she also earlier said that everybody ignored it, the investigation, and then nothing real was done because a few individuals who weren't the major players were put in jail. So
do you think, maybe as a side topic, maybe we've got a lot to get into and we shouldn't get into it now, but I think the panel investigating the January 20th thing recently, they said this last week, made some things about, like, basically saying that Trump had committed crimes.
Yes.
And was their conclusions or their summary from it. Do you think Trump will face any charges before the next election?
I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, well, there are many reasons we could go into it, but do you think he will?
I agree. I highly doubt it. A busy bee in the chat says, what does she mean by captured state? And that's I was wondering that myself. We're a captured state. Is she referring to Russian propaganda? We are captured in that sense.
It's a shame she doesn't elaborate upon that, because that's a big statement to make about the UK. I guess, and this is possibly giving her too much credit, I don't know, that what she's referring to is the very many large amounts of dubious Russian money that have been deposited in the coffers of the Tory party who are currently in power. That the Tory party who are currently in power, and specifically this prime minister and the cabinet he's assembled around him, are all the people who won the Brexit campaign back in 2016, which was almost certainly a successful exercise of this Russian disinformation and misinformation talking about.
So
the Leave campaign, yeah. So I guess what she's talking about is that the people who are in power in the UK at the moment are the people who directly enacted what Russia wanted to happen back in 2016, and eventually Brexit happened in 2019, and now currently are so financially tied to the Russians that are not capable of acting better. I guess that's what she's referring to.
It's been interesting seeing the kind of British government's response to everything going on in the past couple of weeks, because it's been like lots of talk. You know, we're leading the global efforts of subduing Russia, and what was it today? The six point plan, which is very Michael Scott.
Yeah.
1 point per day. We are back in business, but but in terms of the actual sanctions and stuff, I think I read today that none of the Russian oligarchs that have directly funded any of the Tory cabinet, like any of their political campaigns, have been sanctioned in the recent list of sanctions. Mm. Weird coincidence. Don't bite the hand that feeds you, I guess.
Exactly. And I think when challenged in particular about Abramovich, a journalist asked Boris Johnson, why hasn't he been sanctioned yet? And Boris said, oh, everything has to go through due process. Which, firstly, there are several things he's done since he became prime minister in 2019, where he skipped due process. Interesting that in this case, he decided to observe it. And secondly, all the sanctions they introduced a week ago were also skipped due process.
Mm.
Because it was deemed the situation was urgent enough that they didn't need to go through the normal channels. So why... a week and a half later, is this one billionaire who's donated millions to the Tory party still undergoing the due process before they determine whether or not he gets sanctioned? It's all codswallop. Anyway,
we could easily get sidetracked. We're using these tweets as a structure so we don't just go on a massive 5-hour long rant, clearly. Please carry on.
Bored you listening. I'll skip to tweets. 16, where it says, the invasion of Ukraine is not just about Ukraine. we are part of the plan. We've always been part of the plan. Ukraine is not just fighting for Ukraine, but for the rest of us too. And maybe that's why we fail to understand Putin's strategy in the Ukraine, because it's not just a strategy in Ukraine, it's directed at us too. And that's what makes this such a uniquely perilous moment, not least because we still don't understand we're at war.
I mean, yeah, I agree that Putin is definitely thinking of the grand strategy. You know, it's not just about Ukraine, and every decision he's making, he's thinking about. Do you think it's because Western governments, including our own, those governments are thinking about the next like 4 to 8 years, the next, you know, five years, their term in office, whereas Putin, along with other dictators, you know, Xi Jinping as well, they're thinking about their legacy and the next, you know, 20 to 50 years.
Absolutely. No, that's why the bad guys win, because they're willing to do the things that the good guys aren't willing to do. And in this case, even when the good guys, in inverted commas, let's say the West, even when their governments are actually populated by bad guys, as you say, they're in democracies, and they are aiming to keep the democracies going. So they're only thinking short term. Yes, exactly right. So the bad guys, the dictators, win because they're able to plan for the long term, because they're like, I'm still going to be in power in 20 years. I don't know about you, but I am. I think you're right. I think he plays the long game. And Putin in particular, I think, has always had that determination, that psychopathy, that sociopathy, to say, I'm staying in power and I'm controlling this. You know, I'm rigging every election. Whereas, to be honest, it's tempting to look at Trump and that completely cack-handed attempt by the Republicans, and Trump in particular, to win the 2020 election, to rig it in his own favor. No one in the West has Putin's, like, just blind determination, his single-minded focus, his cool-headed, calculating, strategical mindset. Although I do think he's gone a bit weird lately. The last couple of weeks, he's gone a bit weird, and I think he's definitely losing control of the situation with the Ukraine.
Like, well, that's what makes this so scary, right? Like, everything with Putin has been like, oh, he's a maniac, but he's got a logical head. He'd never do this. He'd never do that. Yeah. He'd never fully try and invade and take over Ukraine. He'd never do that. And then he did. You know, he'd never push the nuclear button. Well, can we be sure? Can we be sure of that now?
No, to be honest. And maybe that's it. Maybe this is the seeming loss of control by Putin is part of his bluff. You know, he's like, I'm going insane, so when I can nuclear threat, everyone gets really scared. A bit like Nixon said it, you know, you have to act insane for them to believe you. I think that's what I'm paraphrasing, but he said something like that.
Nixon.
Good old Nixon.
I am not a crook.
Jux Interiors in the chat. Hello. He says, hey,
Jux Interiors in the chat.
Jux Interior. Oh, what a nice one.
Thanks for stopping by, Jux. I know that name.
Desolator Magic says, Putin lost like 16 boss battles in a row in Elden Ring and then went on an angry rampage in Ukraine. That's the real story.
Oh my god. Oh yeah, someone did actually mention Elden Ring and said, are we playing? Oh yeah, Avro said, are we playing Elden Ring? I just started playing it today, actually. Sorry, I'm derailing our very serious chat about,
I think,
World
I derailed
3.
It by reading Desolator Magic's comment.
But no, it's very good so far. I'm enjoying it, and I've only thrown the controller several times.
So that kind of wraps it up for this Twitter thread. There's a couple more tweets adding a bit more detail to what she says, but it's more getting very British focused about actions taken by the Russians in Britain, such as the assassination of some Russian double agent in the UK a few years ago, as well as hacking and leaking Hillary's emails in America, and again talking about the Brexit campaign and Russia's involvement in that. But I think the key phrase is that she summarized it by saying, Putin isn't coming for us next. He already has come for us. So do you think that's true, Alex? Do you believe in that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think if he could flick a switch and all of us could be gone and he'd still be there with Russia, he would do it in a heartbeat. Absolutely. I think he does. Seriously, though, I think he looks at the West and doesn't see opportunity to collaborate. I think he sees, you know, how can I beat them? How can I get the better of them?
Yeah.
And I think he has been doing that longer than 2014. But, like, I think his entirety in office. But, I mean, I do have to wonder what is... I mean, everyone's thinking this, and this is what's keeping everyone up at night right now. But what is the end game of all this? How does this end? It's scary to think about.
It's very scary. And what's puzzling about it is that we know his excuse officially is to keep NATO at bay. He's saying NATO is being aggressive and expanded too close to Russian borders. And if Ukraine joined the EU as they wished, they would also join NATO. And if that happened, then there'd be a very large NATO nation bordering Russia. And he says that would be a threat to Russian sovereignty. Obviously, that's BS. We wouldn't do that. But he uses that excuse. But what's interesting is that by invading Ukraine, Ukraine borders NATO nations on the other side. The Ukraine is the bridge between NATO nations and Russia. So he invades Ukraine, takes it over, and then has NATO nations on his border, which is his excuse for invading Ukraine in the first place. So there's just... I don't really know what his end goal is, because even his official excuses don't make any sense.
There's also a theory. I mean, maybe we're veering into the conspiracy theory territory. But there's that theory that he's actually dying and has got like terminal cancer. Going back to the information war, this could be propaganda that we've seen on the other side. This could be, I've seen this posted around. I don't know where this has come from. So again, I'm now spreading information that I can't source.
It's true, yeah.
But I guess the idea is to make him look, you know, weak and decrepit and as if he's on his way out. But I don't know where that information has come from. Do you know what, actually? I don't think that's fully fair. I don't think I've just got it from nowhere. I think the like defense secretary in the UK said it or something that. Okay. I think it's actually kind of sourced from somewhere.
See, the problem at the moment is that maybe this is the success of Russian propaganda on the internet, but you know, whatever our government politicians say in this country, I just don't like this. It's pay no attention to it because it's all guff. And maybe I say that because the Russian propaganda on the internet has succeeded, but I also think we've got a particularly pathetic bunch of politicians in power at the moment.
So it is that story is being reported by a bunch of like news outlets, established ones, not just like, you know, Propaganda Today or you know, that kind of thing. Just asking that question, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know where that information's come from. It's the fact that I think he looks a bit like puffy faced, apparently.
He does. Yeah. I've been noticing this for the last couple of years, actually. I assumed it was some lockdown weight, you know, some pandemic pudginess put on by staying inside. But because a lot of news articles keep using pictures of him from 2017, 2016, when he looks much trimmer. But he doesn't look well. But that doesn't really mean anything. That doesn't mean cancer. He's put on weight. You know, he's in his 60s now, right?
I think he's 70, isn't he?
Is he 70 now?
I think apparently he's 70, yeah.
Well, there you go.
What was I going to say? I was going to say something. Yeah. No, it's gone. Sorry, just to add to that theory, the fact that he's always sat 30 feet away from people people assume, oh, he's terrified that they're going to assassinate him. But actually, maybe he's got a really shot immune system from having these cancer treatments is the idea. And he doesn't want to be near anyone because of his immune system. And there was a photo shoot he did with some airline stewardesses yesterday, I think, or the day before yesterday. Is that, you know, the Russian Aeroflot company?
I don't know.
I think it was grounded in most European countries. Oh, but yeah, anyway, right. he went to meet them. But there was a post on that I saw on Reddit that showed a GIF of the event, and it like zoomed in, and it kind of showed that like his hand went through the microphone.
Whoa.
So he might not have actually been there, and it was just a green screen, but
whoa, that's weird.
But so I mean, there's a little bit to that theory, but I don't know.
I mean, if his death were to put an end to the conflict and Russia were to withdraw, then you know, that would be good. But I don't know if his death would actually change anything. I definitely do think, though, his age has got a lot to do with it. If he's got cancer, that would explain a lot. But I think, even if it's not cancer, I think he's reached an age where he wants, like you say, to secure his legacy. It's been pretty clear for the last two decades that his ultimate desire is to reestablish the Soviet Union and the borders of Russia as it used to be. And it's interesting because, I'm really making this banal now. I'm bringing it down to a really crass level. On Netflix right now in the UK, there's a film called The Peacemaker, which was made in 1997 with George Clooney and Nicole Kidman. And it's a very, very 90s thriller where a rogue Soviet general, former Soviet general, steals a nuclear weapon. And a friendly Russian spy tells George Clooney to explain the motivations behind this person, this general stealing the missile. He says, he's a young man. He's a fanatic. He grew up in the Soviet Union. It's all he's ever known. He's dismayed by the end of the Cold War and the breaking up of the Soviet Union. He wants the West to be defeated for the glory of the Russia that he knew. And I thought, you know,
that's Putin.
That's kind of Putin, yeah. he grew up in the Soviet Union. He prospered and succeeded in the KGB. You know, he was very prominent in it before the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And then he went straight into politics. And ever since, he's been trying to reconstruct
the Soviet Union
and reestablish the Soviet Union's power. You know, and I think maybe that's it. Maybe he's just, as well as being an individual evil on every level, he's just fanatic about this world because he never knew any better. And it was the world that treated him well. He could prosper in that world, so he wants it restored.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it works out for him, because there is a generation of people now in Russia that didn't grow up with the Soviet Union, and they didn't know how difficult that was to be that isolated, you know. Mm. And now, with Russia becoming increasingly isolated, all the kind of Western luxuries that they're used to may now be stripped away. You know, Russia's economy is looking worse and worse as the days go on.
The internet's getting more and more restricted as the days go by.
It'll be interesting to see how people respond to this and whether Russia will utilize its information warfare enough to be able to convince their citizens that what they're doing is right, you know. But it's a scary stuff, and it's a scary time. Thank you for taking us through all those tweets, though, Robin. It's a very interesting Twitter thread. I'll say again, I have linked it in the description if anyone does want to go and have a read. So I think Spiffing asked a while ago, he wondered if she'd sourced any of these tweets. Well, I mean, that's kind of what we were trying to do. Well, what Robin has done lovely has tried to source every tweet individually. And we're kind of discussing whether they're true or misleading.
That's why we decided to talk about it, because not only was it a really interesting argument that she made, but because it was Twitter, she hadn't put any sources in. And so we were really like, this thing's gone viral. It's an interesting argument. Let's see where she's getting the information from and whether it tallies with what we can establish the facts to be. Obviously, a lot more research needs to be done to produce a cogent, coherent, comprehensive, historical essay on the subject, but Yeah, at least it reminds us that every day history is being made, and sometimes the history is bad.
What's the thing about in some decades weeks happen, but in some weeks decades happen? It feels like we've been living in a week where decades have happened. Also, Doom in the comments says, did you guys see that actress's poem about if I was Putin's mother? Did you see that? Oh my god. It made me want to tear my eyes out. It was the worst thing to happen to the internet since its invention, I think.
Do I want to look at it? Shall I avoid it? It sounds like I should.
I'd steer clear of it, to be honest. But yeah, no, it was awful. Okay. It was awful, dude. It was very reminiscent of Gal Gadot's Imagine.
Was it Gal Gadot? Was it her?
It was not Gal Gadot, no.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Robin, for that discussion. That was a very interesting one. And I'm very sorry for everyone that you had to listen to us have this depressing conversation about Ukraine and Russia, but I feel like, I don't know, it's all we've been thinking about this week, and I'm sure it's all anyone in the comments has been thinking about as well. So it felt good. It felt good to kind of talk about it. But I hope everyone out there has a lovely week and stays safe as well. Is there anything else that we needed to talk about in this live stream or what you wanted to mention?
No, just thank you all again for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and our YouTube members for continuing to support us and for listening to us discuss topics like this in possibly too much depth for a Sunday evening. But thanks again. Yeah. And we'll be back soon, hopefully all three of us.
Oh, well, we'll post Martin's bail, I guess. Again, but this is the last time. Next time we're going to leave him in jail. But,
draw the line here.
Yeah. But thanks, everyone. Thanks. And thanks for all your comments in the chat as well. It's been really great reading some of them.
Fantastic.
Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the rest of your week. No, enjoy next week. It's Sunday.
Next week.
I'm forgetting days. but thanks a lot, you guys. We'll see you next time.